from Tukito LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and I've always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it, and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain-loss guilt-virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success and share them with you. I'm not a doctor, most of my guests won't be either, so we can't offer medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor because they know you and have access to the bigger picture. This week's extraordinary woman is Taffany Elrod. Taffany is a professional chef and culinary instructor located in New York City and New York's Hudson Valley. With over 15 years of professional culinary experience, she has cooked and taught many culinary styles with a special interest in food for health and culinary traditions. Most recently, she taught professional cooking for veterans returning to the workforce in New York City before opening a small restaurant with her husband in New York's Hudson Valley. Inspired by her success with her own ketogenic low-carb high-fat diet, she launched a cooking website called Keto Cooking School, where she shares recipes and techniques and plans to explore the connection between traditional, classical, and the ketogenic way of eating. Okay, welcome, Taffany Elrod, to the Keto Women Podcast. It's really good to have you here. Hi.
Thank you. It is absolutely a pleasure to be here. Hello.
So why don't you tell the listeners a bit about yourself?
Alrighty. My name is Taffany Elrod. I'm a chef, a cooking instructor, and I own a restaurant. I am based in New York. I cooked in New York City for 15 years, and I now have a restaurant in the Mid-Hudson Valley. In Apple Country.
Oh, nice.
It's actually lovely. My background is primarily in food for health, and I have taught all over the city. I taught at Columbia University on nutrition study, taught in elementary school. I've cooked as a private chef, a caterer, pastry chef in natural foods places, even vegan places. And food has been my life for a very long time.
It sounds like it. It sounds like you've really done everything there.
I've tried to.
Okay, so tell me about keto. How long have you been keto? What does your keto look like?
I've been keto for approximately 15 months. And it looks for me, what's the word? It's not real regimented. I'm not a real regimented keto. I'm in the restaurant 7 days a week. 10, 12 hours a day.
Wow. Full on.
Yeah, full on. So I have to really make it work for me according to when I don't choose when I eat most days. I don't always even choose what I eat. When I first started out, I was trying to track and, you know, track my macros and things like that to make sure I was on the right page. And I do have a ketonics breathalyzer, you know, meter. So I tested to make sure I was in ketosis. But at this point, especially due to my time, I really just run with it. So that means for me making food choices on the fly a lot. We always have eggs in the restaurant. We always have cheese. We keep salad vegetables prepped. A lot of days, you know, we're talking about eggs and beef bacon and fresh mozzarella. And
nothing wrong with that.
No. And I can, at this point, I feel pretty comfortable saying I can feel when I am in ketosis and when I'm not. And I can tell the difference. And quite frankly, due to my schedule and how much stress is in my life, a lot of times I'm not. That, you know, that's the honest truth. I tend to get kicked out of ketosis by lack of sleep, high stress in the restaurant. All summer long while it's really hot. That's really stressful to me. So I can feel the difference. But no matter what, whether I'm in ketosis or not, I'm healthier and happier when I am not eating carbs.
Yeah. I think a lot of people really underestimate the impact of things like stress and lack of proper sleep. And it really does impact, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. I mean, I'm, you know, sort of a case study in how stress can just boot you right out of ketosis or lack of sleep. You know, like I said, I mean, it'll be a busy Friday night in the restaurant and I will just feel it coming over me, you know, especially in the summertime when it's 100 and some degrees in there and the phone's ringing and everybody wants everything absolutely at once. And I can just feel it. I just, bam, I'm in a different space. I feel different physically and mentally.
Mm. So you, and you mentioned about that. I mean, I just imagine you basically don't have time to track, even if it's something you wanted to do. You just don't have the time for that. But it's something that a lot of people find useful in the early days, just to get used to how many carbs are in this and how many carbs are in that and protein and fat and all the rest of it. You started with an advantage there, I should imagine, that you know just by looking at a handful of something how much is in there. So I should imagine your guesstimating skills are already up there.
They are good. I mean, I had definitely had the advantage of understanding the makeup of food. You know, I already knew where there was carbohydrates or hidden carbohydrates, what was high in protein, what was high in fat. So that was a big advantage. I still tracked. It was very helpful. Sometimes you still can easily underestimate how many carbohydrates are in an onion, you know, or even you're going crazy on the cucumbers, you know. Sad but true.
No, but I've never gone crazy on cucumber. I can guarantee you that.
I have. And sometimes now, just to dial myself back in, like you mentioned, I find it trying to track because time-wise and based on what I'm eating, it's hard for me to track because most of the tracking software is predicated on packaged foods to a great extent.
Yeah, right.
And I don't use those. So it can be hard for me to take the time to enter that I had one mozzarella ball.
Yeah.
or guesstimate how much, you know, or, oh, it's an ounce and I have to. But once in a while, when I feel like, maybe I'm veering a little too far off course, I will try to spend a day or two tracking. And the reality is, it's not that I don't know, but when I have to track it, it makes me pull myself back in because I don't want to track. So I just, okay, well, if I just eat this butter and this cheese, then I know I'm good and I don't have to enter all this information.
And the reality of it is, by the sounds of it, that you eat sort of similar things on a regular basis anyway. So you must know that these things you're eating. I tell you what, I find, tracking in the moment, I suppose, just when you're doing a new recipe, for example, working out the macros for that, that's useful, I think. So you can really gauge what is in your serving of whatever it is you've just made for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. And luckily I have that responsibility as well, that if I want to share a recipe, I have to know what the macros are. So I have to crunch those numbers. And the funny thing is, if I have to do it for work, it doesn't affect me the same way as if I have to do it for myself.
Right. that makes sense.
So, you know, I crunch those numbers. And, but luckily I do have access to, you know, those foods being always having prepped salad, vegetables, because I have no choice. I always have those there, you know, always having those foods. It's hard for me to find the time sometimes to cook a different, you know, I get bored sometimes because I'm surrounded by the same food constantly and there's so many things that are off limits and I want to, as a chef, I want to experiment and try and make all these different dishes.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I'm hemmed in by the fact that I can't because I'm cooking already other food. So, and prepping other food. So I don't get to do all the experimenting that I would like to.
And do you find that hard sometimes if you're finding yourself in a position where you've been busy all day and so you're getting really hungry. And in that moment, often I find when hunger becomes a bit overwhelming, and the images that come in my brain are all the things that I shouldn't be eating. What happens when they're there in front of you in the restaurant? Is it Is that difficult? Do you always have, say, something prepared that you can grab quickly that is keto friendly? How does that work?
In the beginning, for the first 6 months, I would say, I felt no temptation whatsoever. I felt so much better. I could have cared less. I didn't want to touch anything else. Now, as time went on and, you know, being busy, sometimes it's very tempting. I'm hungry. I don't even necessarily want the food that has, you know, the carby food, but it's everywhere within quick, easy reach. And I'm in a hurry and I'm hungry and I'm frustrated. It's very easy to reach out for it. The only options I found that really help for me is when I have time in the afternoon, which is around 2 or 3 in the afternoon, to eat a very, very filling meal with a lot of fat and my protein. So eggs and sausage, eggs and bacon and cheese, and to fill myself to the point that I won't be hungry at 8 or 9 when I don't have time to reach for something and I'm too busy, or what, you know, whatever time that may be. If I do that, if I'm full, I will not eat anything else. I cannot tolerate that sensation of being full and then eating some more. So it, you know, it's kind of like a, if you want to say almost a trick to play on myself, but you know, if I fill up on eggs, I won't eat something else later. Or to have options. When I first started, I used to keep a container of coconut butter on my station, and it would stay warm enough there that I could spoon it. And it, when I felt the need to nosh, I would take a spoon of that coconut butter. It has a little bit of sweetness. It sort of hits all the marks.
And very satiating.
Yes, that would help me to just move on and, you know, hold on till the next moment or whatever. And especially because in the beginning, when I first started, you know, I was a big grazer and a big snacker and would eat small amounts of things all day long. So that urge to just graze and snack was very strong. And that would really help me to push through without having to go for something else.
I think that's quite a common thing, I expect, with chefs, isn't it? That just little and often, because you're tasting things as you're working and grabbing things, when, because you literally only have a few minutes at a time to yourself. You haven't got time to sit down often and have a big meal. You've just got to grab bits and pieces. So it's
absolutely
a habit.
Yeah, absolutely. Most chefs either don't eat anything all day, or they eat just, you know, a taste of this and a taste of that and a little of this and a little of that all day.
Yeah. And have you found something that most people seem to find with keto is that they can go longer between meals without being hungry? Have you found that's helped you get through your day when you're busy?
Absolutely. If I'm doing things properly and staying on track, it absolutely... And scheduling that time for myself. So I make a coffee in the morning, and I've never been a morning eater. I can't eat before 11, 12 at all. Never have been able to. So that's fine. Now my coffee sees me through because I add collagen and cream, and I'm good till 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. And then if I have the time, or I carve out that time to make myself a decent meal at 2, 3 in the afternoon, then I am okay for the rest of the day. I will try to sometimes eat, if there's a quiet lull, I'll try to eat around 7 or 8 at night, because I don't like to eat at 10 at night.
Yeah, I was just going to say that to you, actually. So it sounds like you try and have your main meal in that early afternoon slot.
Yes.
Do you then find you need to eat at the end of your shift, or do you just not bother?
I eat something light, usually, if I've had that main meal, because I'm working all day and on my feet, and it's quite physically demanding. If I don't eat anything for a later meal, I tend to get overly hungry, and then it starts to trigger this, you know, where I feel like eating something else and something else. And if I have something fairly light, but with some fat and a little protein, then, you know, I feel okay and I can go to sleep, and, you know, I wake up the next day and do that same routine again versus being hungry early, or, you know, sort of throws me off course if I don't have something. Because a 10, 12 hour day being on my feet and working physically, you know, the reality is that one meal isn't really sufficient.
No, you need the fuel spread out a little bit more.
Yeah.
This is what I find so fascinating, that each person has such a unique way that keto works for them and the way that they've found to make it suit their lifestyle?
Yeah, it's for me, for, you know, this situation that I'm in of constantly being in the restaurant. For the first year that we were open, I wasn't keto and I was really falling apart. I was hot, tired, stressed. Of course, if there's very few things more stressful than opening a restaurant and starting a restaurant.
Absolutely.
And I would just not eat all day and then just come home and crash out and, you know, just be tired and just have ice cream. I just couldn't cope.
Yeah.
You know, and that wasn't going well for me. I was getting very sick very quickly.
Well, if you've got all these things in your life and then you're adding these glucose spikes and crashes in your blood all the time. I mean, that's they're just going to feed each other in downward spiral, aren't they?
It was horrendous. Absolutely.
So what made you start? What made that change and led you to find keto and start down that path?
Well, I'll try to not turn it into a super long story. I had, in that year of the restaurant, I had started to feel bad. Worse. I wasn't amazing before we started, and I had gained more weight than I had ever carried. I've always been in a large body, but suddenly my body was so large that I couldn't do what I needed to do. And I was getting worried. I couldn't bend over. I'd come home at night and I was having a hard time getting up the stairs because I couldn't lift my leg. And I thought, you know, first of all, I have a restaurant that needs me. This isn't going to do.
Yeah.
You know, I have a husband who's relying on me. He can't work without me and he can't take care of me. And I'm devolving. I'm afraid of what my future is going to look like. And that was the first time I really felt that way. And my blood pressure was elevated for the first time, probably due to the restaurant, but you know, but my health wasn't helping. And I was just starting to feel like an absolute wreck. And I really had to stop and meditate on it. I had stopped dieting, you know, quote unquote dieting 20 years ago. I had turned my back on that and I refused to be on that merry-go-round of dieting and off and on. So I really had to check in with myself. What was I going to do? I knew I didn't want to go on some kind of diet, and I knew that didn't work. And I felt sort of helpless in the face of that. What is the answer that I'm going to do about this? Where do I turn? And so, of course, I just started to investigate and look, and I think one of the first things I did was order like a, you know, workout video set, which was pretty hilarious. I was up at 6 a.m. before the restaurant, like trying to work out.
Oh, you actually did it. I can't tell you how many exercise DVDs I've got that I watch. I used to watch them through once with a bar of chocolate and then never do them.
It's a testament to how desperate I really was that I think it was 2 months straight, did six.
Wow.
I did the whole thing 6 days a week. I got
before
up
a full day at the restaurant.
Before a full day at the
wow.
restaurant. And I could barely do it. I mean, I could just barely do it. I was, oh my gosh, the first couple of days, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I cried through that video.
I bet you did.
I was in pain and it wasn't happening. And I was so upset about how weak my body had become and how, you know, how I couldn't do anything. My knees were bothering me, the whole shebang. But I got through that, and as I was in my course of investigating, and you know, I looked online and started looking at everything, I just happened across this random video on YouTube that said keto something. And I was aware of keto as a therapeutic diet for
right.
epilepsy. So I had heard of it before, but I had not seen people applying it, you know, in their own lives. And I also found the website Authority Nutrition. And started looking there, and they had some, and I started finding real information, science-based information. And that was the first time in my life I had seen any legitimate science-based information that actually was supporting a particular way of eating.
And that must have spoken to you a bit with your training and your professional life. And that was the kind of level that you needed. You needed that information.
Absolutely. I needed, you know, for example, I had seen before Gary Taub's book. I can't remember the name right now, but, you know, his book about obesity. I had never looked at that book and never cracked a page because I had assumed it was just another book telling people to cut back on what they eat and exercise more. Because right. to me, anytime anybody mentioned weight, diet, obesity, that's what they were going
to say. Standard line. Mm-hmm. Eat less, move more, and you're golden.
Exactly. And if you're overweight, that you're not doing those things, then it's your fault. So it wasn't until 2 or 3 months into this that I realized that's what his book wasn't about. And I would, you could have picked my face up off the floor. I was like, well, you gotta be kidding me. So for me, it just simply, so I went off like a chime. I don't, you know, I felt like a tuning fork, something I just resonated with me so deeply. And I, you know, I couldn't sleep at night. I'd be elbowing my husband and saying, no, listen to this. You know, I just found what I had been looking for 20 years.
Wow.
And I still didn't trust it, you know, but I decided to try it. And especially to try it because it was something I had never, in all my time, I had never cut back on carbs. I knew a lot about it because of cooking. I had learned to cook that food. But I grew up in a Whole Foods vegetarian household. You know, I had been vegan. I believed in whole carbohydrates, natural carbohydrates. I was a fruit fiend. And I thought, you know what? You've never tried this. You've never cut carbohydrates out in any form, but except for refined. So give it a month. Try it. If you've never had results, then try something you've never tried. Maybe you will get some new results.
Exactly. Yeah. Why not try something if nothing else has been working for you?
Absolutely.
Try something new, and perhaps it's just another thing on the list that doesn't work, but maybe.
Yeah.
It's the one. Exactly. You must have had a bit of an inkling. The fact that it all sort of resonated with you and made sense, you must have felt quite excited and believing I think this could be the one.
I was really excited, but I couldn't allow myself to believe. I just couldn't get my hopes up. But I decided to give it a try. And I just slowly started to cut back carbohydrates. And then I actually did another thing I've never done, which was speak with, actually consult with a nutritionist, Amy Berger of Tuit Nutrition. Yep. Mm-hmm. Just to make sure I was on the right track, you know, and get some support. She's awesome. And within a very short period of time, I began to feel better. I'm talking about within a few days. I didn't feel well when I started. So I thought, well, I feel bad. I felt sick. And actually, then we had a meal. We ate somewhere else, which we rarely do. And it made me sick. And I thought, I feel so bad. I'm going to start right now. Because everybody was talking about keto flu. And I thought, well, if I'm sick, you know, who cares?
Might as well just add to it.
Might as well start. So I actually never experienced much keto flu. A little bit, but not a lot. But almost immediately, really almost immediately, I started to feel better. And within a month or two, I was feeling better than I had since grade school.
Wow.
Quite honestly. And the clouds started to clear, and I just simply began to feel like, not a new person, but so truly myself. A person that I hadn't been in contact with in so long.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I thought my life has changed so much since starting keto, and the different avenues that open up, and the changes that happen that just all feel natural. But and you said you felt so much better, and you could probably see this new pathway opening up for you. And being in the profession you're in, that must have had a big influence on that, because keto, I know it's more than just about the food, but predominantly it's the food. So what kind of impact did that have on your career?
It absolutely reinvigorated my enthusiasm for what I was doing. I love cooking. I love teaching. I always have. I have a real passion for culinary history, culinary anthropology, traditional food ways. It just resonated with me so deeply. I was so excited. I just had to, you know, these pieces started falling together for me. Everything is so, traditional food is so keto.
Right.
Traditional food, you know, if you cook French food, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about,
yeah.
You know, as a chef, you know, when you're trained, my training was in traditional French and traditional Asian techniques, but it's all right there, you know, and it suddenly now you don't have to be afraid of your hollandaise, and, you know, you can cook your stock, not just because it's good and, you know, it's part of the profession, but because it's wholesome and it's vitalizing and it's nutritional. I just was so excited. I didn't know which way to turn with myself. And that's what has happened for me. You know, I like to experiment. I like to make different things. But what I really love about this way of eating and this way of cooking is that it absolutely is not new or crazy. It is absolutely foundational to what I consider an elemental function of humanity, which is to cook.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says about not cooking. I believe that cooking has been a part of creating our humanity. And so to me, it is just simply profoundly foundational and profoundly correct.
Yeah.
And I'm going to choke up because it's so.
Yeah. But I think that's fantastic how keto has taken you back round and down into your real core values and the things that you absolutely love, and that potentially you'd started moving away a bit from in your professional life.
Yeah.
And then keto takes you right back to where you really are meant to be. I mean, it's obvious to me this is absolutely your passion right from your core.
Absolutely.
And so everything, it seems to me, is feeding back into this now, and that you're spreading that back out again. I mean, I know you have a website explaining and showing to other people. Why don't you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I started a website called ketocookingschool.com based on this excitement I had to share. Because of all the time I spend in the restaurant, I don't have it developed to where I'd like to, but my goal is simply to share recipes that are ketogenic and keto-friendly, and to share this excitement about this information and let people return to cooking eggs with butter and help people to understand the difference between a stock and a broth. So real teaching, techniques, ingredients, and just fun. You know, I've got recipes on there that I know work, that I've shared with students over years, or that I made for myself since I went ketogenic. And there's only a few, but there'll be more. That's not the point. But that I just am so enthusiastic to share this. As a teacher, I always love sharing anyway. And it's so elegant. It's so beautiful. I just can't share enough. And this is an outlet for me, since that's not what I'm doing in the restaurant yet. It's an outlet for me to do that. And when I come up across something really special, or, you know, just can't hold my enthusiasm anymore, I can share it with the world. Yeah.
We spoke about this a little the other day, how you're trying to feed some of those philosophies into the restaurant, even though it's not ketogenic, the restaurant. But you are applying those things within the foods that you cook, using the whole foods and not adding sugar and those kinds
of
things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we started out from a place of being as real food as we can to begin with. My husband and I both, you know, believe in that. I'll never feed a person something that I wouldn't eat myself, and he feels the same way. And I'm not going to watch people bring their children and feel like, you know, that's garbage that they're giving their children. I can't make my living like that. But as this has developed for me, we're in a small community. We've gotten to know a lot of our customers very well. And when they come in with their health issues, and they come in and they talk about it because this is where they eat. And that, you know, is central to your health. People realize that whether they're doing something about it or not. And so at least I can offer options and, you know, give them a choice. Would they rather have this or that? Sometimes I make something special for somebody and we do the bunless burgers and things like that. And at least I know that the food is as high quality as we can offer. Yeah. And that as time goes by, I see people more interested and, you know, have hopefully we'll find a place to offer more and more options.
Yeah. So as that demand grows, you can answer it. You can supply
absolutely.
It. Yeah. Fantastic. And so what have you found the way you work in the restaurant doesn't really work, but at home with the cooking techniques you use, do you tend to use different equipment now than you did? Your store cupboard must look a bit different.
Well, the main thing that's changed for me is not necessarily the equipment. Obviously, my cupboard has changed to some extent. So whereas before there was always some sort of staple starch, you know, things that I relied on, a lot of rice, oatmeal, whole grain flours. And obviously those things are gone. I don't use them anymore for myself and our cooking. Potatoes. My great grandfather was a potato farmer. We had a lot of potatoes. I ate a lot of potatoes growing up. Potatoes are out. I thought I would miss those things. I don't. I'm shocked at how much I don't miss them. And I just have, I always loved, for instance, braising. I love to braise short ribs, chuck roast, chicken legs. So now that has just moved to the forefront. And instead of having to worry about, am I going to, you know, time how long to cook this pot of rice? When am I going to put it on? I just don't have to. And so it's actually simplified my cooking a great deal. I'm much more happy with it. If I bake, I use coconut flour, almond flour, etc. And I don't have to worry anymore. Am I overbeating this and it's going to become heavy? It's going to become, you know, overworked and glutinous. It's not an issue.
I've noticed that with a lot of the recipes, especially those things that traditionally are more complicated to cook, the cake and dessert yeah. type things are actually a lot simpler when they're keto-fied. It's quite often almost a case of throwing everything in the bowl and mixing it up and putting
absolutely.
It in the oven. Sometimes a little bit more complicated than that, but not much.
No.
They seem very simple.
Absolutely. And it's a lot harder to wreck them.
Yeah.
And it which is. I enjoy, and as a teacher, I enjoy it. It's great to say to somebody, this isn't going to be complicated.
Yeah. And it's fun, I think, finding things that you liked before and keto-fying them.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely love
it. It's a challenge,
that.
Isn't it? It's a good challenge.
Something yeah. will pop in my mind. I was like, ooh, I can replace this and I can do that. And then I can't rest until I do it. I have to try it.
Absolutely. So talking of these things that you make up and you share, let's have some recipes from you.
Sure. Well, one of the first recipe that I posted to my website and something that I make by the gallon full in our restaurant is something that's very popular in the States these days, which is buffalo chicken sauce, buffalo wing sauce. And right. it's very simple. People buy it pre-made, and I'm not sure why, because it's usually full of nonsense when they do. And all you need is 4 ingredients. Uh-huh. You can keep it almost indefinitely in the refrigerator. Butter, black pepper, garlic powder, or better yet, granulated garlic. There actually is a difference. And hot sauce of your choice. Durkee's, Frank's Red Hot, any just good old-fashioned hot sauce that you prefer. You could do it with any hot sauce.
Yeah.
And you melt, let's say, about 2 tablespoons of butter in a saute pan or a saucepan. Don't get it too hot. Just let it melt. Whisk in a teaspoon of black pepper and a teaspoon of garlic powder. Those will suspend themselves in that butter if you whisk them in nicely. Right. And then you just pour in about a cup of hot sauce. And it's, you know, you can adjust to your taste. There's no hard and fast rules. You can't ruin it. You whisk in that hot sauce, and if the butter is melted but not too hot, it should hold those spices in suspension in the sauce. It will emulsify. So instead of all those spices sinking down to the bottom, they'll actually stay in the sauce, and they'll stay that way for as long as you keep it.
So that's the trick. So, but what does that look like? Just, well, it sounds like there's a bit of a fine line between just melted and getting it too hot.
How do you tell? You put it on a low temperature, and as soon as it melts, but before it starts to, bubble or boil, the butter will still look cloudy and like a whole butter, and it'll still have the sort of foam on top. Not to the point that it's starting to break with bubbles and pop, and as that the actual sort of cream of the butter begins to diminish into the fat, then you've gone too far. You just want it to be nicely melted. If I don't own a microwave. I forget that people use them. If you have a microwave, you could do it in there too. You would just, give it a couple bursts, like 5 seconds, take a look, 5 seconds, take a look. And within a few seconds, it should be ready to go. And
I always find that's the trick with the microwave. If you're going to do something like that, is to do really short bursts and keep looking at it, because it can go over so fast. But that's interesting, and that makes sense. So you're catching the butter before it splits itself.
Right.
Once it still holds together, and because it holds itself together, it's going to hold the ingredients that you put in there together.
That's right. And it's emulsifying. This is sort of a reverse of finishing with butter or mounting with butter, where you would whisk in whole butter at the end. But it's the same theory, that butter is going to, but whisk the spices, the garlic powder and the black pepper, into the butter and make sure they're completely mixed in. And then start to slowly add your hot sauce. That's the key.
And you mentioned about the difference between garlic powder and granules. I mean, I'm thinking in my head that's all the difference there is the size. But is there something else that's important?
That is the difference. The size, but also the texture is different. So powdered garlic tends to be really powdery and it cakes. So it's hard to whisk in. And it actually has a little slightly different flavor. The flavor tends to be a little bit stronger, or almost acrid.
Right.
Whereas with the granulated garlic, because it's in granules, almost like granulated salt, when you mix it in, it won't cake together.
I can imagine with the powder, you're going to get those little clumps of powder.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and the flavor won't be the same. This has a milder flavor, which you actually want in this application. And again, it's if you have we use what's called cafe ground black pepper. It's not finely ground. It's not super coarse. You could even use coarser black pepper. But same thing, you don't want a super, super finely ground pepper either.
Yeah.
For this particular dish, for this particular application. And I mean, don't stress it. If you got finely ground pepper and garlic powder, try it anyway. It's fine. You know?
No, exactly.
You don't have to just, but you'll notice the difference if you make it this way. And you'll see that it looks like buffalo sauce. You know, it has that look to it with the black pepper suspended in there. And that's it. It doesn't need salt because the sauce is salty.
I was going to say salt, so it doesn't.
No,
else. You're getting it from the hot sauce.
Right, exactly.
So you could overdo it.
Absolutely. The hot sauce is generally quite salty, so you wouldn't want to add the salt. You know, if you find when you make, because usually then when I make the wings, I'll lightly season the wings as I cook them and then add that sauce, and that should be sufficient.
Right. So, so what happens with that process? You start cooking the wings first and add it on, or you marinade and cook? How does that work?
It depends on how you're going to cook the wings. You can do either. If you're going to fry the wings, then obviously you don't add the sauce to the wings if you want to deep fat fry them or pan fry them. If you're going to bake them, if you'd like, you can marinate them in a little bit of that sauce first. And then once they have baked, finish them with some more sauce. And if you're to bake them, I want them crispy, I will put them under the broiler for the last couple of minutes just to crisp the skin
up.
Really get them nice and crispy. It works well. And again, you can add a little bit of that sauce before you put them under the broiler, let them crisp up nicely, and then give them another toss with a little more sauce. If you're going to fry them, obviously fry them. For chicken wings. Yeah. And for chicken wings, if you want crispy wings, when you fry them, you need to double fry them the same as you would French fries. You fry them once at a lower temperature, maybe 325, till they're cooked through.
Right. And this we're talking about in a deep fat fryer.
In a deep fat fryer, or even in a pan fry, in a, you know, an inch or two of oil. You set them aside, you let them cool. When you want to serve them, you cook them again. Otherwise, it's nearly impossible to get them fully cooked through and have a good texture. A lot of times you'll get a chicken wing that's sort of flaccid and, you know, kind of still has a lot of resistance. I mean, if you like that, cool, but it, you know,
they
taste a lot better when they're fully cooked. And of course, once they're fully cooked, you know, so for instance, my husband loves to eat the collagen out of there. You know, he loves what's in those joints. He rips the whole thing apart and takes everything out. They need to be fully cooked for you.
Yeah.
And then of course, they're also more nutritional, more nutritionally viable. So.
Right, because the collagen starts breaking down.
Yeah.
And so this sauce, presumably, you can make a big batch and keep it in the fridge and just get some out when you want it? Or is it better to make it fresh each time?
No, absolutely. It actually is one of those sauces that tastes better if you make it a day ahead. You can keep it for almost indefinitely. Absolutely. In the refrigerator, you can keep it for a month.
Yeah, I suppose so it really seeps into the butter and
yeah, exactly.
Melts
it just becomes
together.
More... The flavor becomes, you know, better as it sits. And it's just hot sauce, which is vinegar, salt, and hot peppers, butter and seasonings. So it should last almost indefinitely.
So that's also presumably a sauce that you could just dollop out a bit of that butter and put it on a steak, for example.
You could. I mean, it will be liquid. It won't be, you know, firm.
It doesn't set in the fridge. I see.
No, because you don't have enough butter for that to happen. But you can add it to anything. You know, I put it over chicken and put it on salads. We add it to wraps. You know, I actually, one of my favorite things to do with it, I make chicken soup. And it's funny, I can't eat my chicken soup without a dollop of olive oil and a shot of hot sauce. And I use that hot sauce in the chicken soup.
Yeah.
It's a little milder. You know, it takes a little bit of the edge off from the hot sauce once you made it this way. And I throw it eggs. I love it over my eggs. So I'll make steak and eggs and put it over the steak and eggs.
Nice. And you mentioned earlier another sauce that's particularly good with steak. Chimichurri?
That's right. Chimichurri, which is a Argentinian sauce that's served traditionally with steak. And it's so good.
How do I make this?
Yeah, everybody has their own version, and I'm not saying mine is the most traditional. But you start with fresh herbs, fresh parsley, a good amount of fresh parsley, fresh cilantro is great, dry or fresh oregano, a small amount, it doesn't need to be as strong. You can chop those herbs up by hand, or... you can chop them in the food processor. And there's no hard and fast rules to this. You adjust it to your taste. So it doesn't even really make sense to give amounts. But you would use a lot of parsley, maybe a whole bunch of flat leaf parsley.
So that's the predominant. And you can, do you have to cut it really fine or coarse? Or again, is that how you like it?
It really is how you like it. Traditionally, I believe it's hand chopped with a knife. But at this point, of course, a lot of people just use the food processor, the blender, what have you. I like it so there's still quite a bit of rough leaves of the parsley and the cilantro. But I see people actually make it to the point that it almost looks like a mayonnaise. Got fresh garlic. Got to have some fresh garlic chopped up in there. I use a little bit of red chili flake or red pepper flake to give it a little kick. You can even add red peppers to it if you like. If you have fresh peppers, by all means, some kind of whatever kind of hot pepper you would like or sweet pepper. Lots and lots of olive oil, extra virgin olive oil. You're not going to cook this sauce. It's more akin to a pesto in that it's going to be added afterward. Yeah. It's not for cooking. And, red wine vinegar or lemon juice or a combination for some acidity. Salt and pepper, of course. And you just mix it and you taste it. And again, this sauce you serve fresh, but it needs time for the flavors to marry. If you want to have it with you're going to grill a steak, you make that sauce first. You allow it to sit for half an hour. And the flavors come together in a way that is just, you know, really, really wonderful, better than the sum of the parts, so to speak.
Yeah.
And
it's funny how that happens sometimes, isn't it?
It's amazing. That
together
synergy.
They taste completely different. It sounds very much like a salsa verde that I made. Is it the same kind of thing, just a different twist because it comes from a different place? Or
I believe so. You know, but of course, almost every culture has some similar sauce based on fresh herbs and something acidic. You know, when you eat a lot of fat and a lot of protein, it really helps with digestion. I mean, traditionally, according to traditional cuisine, and I believe that, to have something acidic, something pungent. So you see people having pâté with cornichon. You see people having preserved meats with strong mustard, horseradish, pickled vegetables like kimchi or sauerkraut. And generally speaking, that will help you to digest that, especially if you're new to it, that fat and that protein.
It's interesting, isn't it, how often something that just instinctively tastes good is good for you too. So when you're having something, I've always found that with the really, like a really fatty meat like lamb, what is tasty with it but doesn't necessarily feel as right is something like a rich, creamy sauce. Yeah, that's tasty with it, but actually what really seems to bring it alive is something that cuts through. So that acidity that cuts through the fat a bit, and that instinctively feels right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But also helps with our digestion.
Yeah. You know, like I said, this is coming from a food perspective, a culinary perspective, but I found it to be 100% true. You know, my husband loves this chicken pate that comes from where he's from in Europe. It's a Serbian chicken pate. It's called pastet. He will just eat it from the can. But I started making it with, giving it to him with, like, as if it were pate with French, like, strong mustard and a strong, sharp pickle.
Right.
He loved it. He was like, wait, what? How have I been missing? I've just been eating this straight. And some onion, a little onion, raw onion. That combination made something he enjoyed into something he loves, you know, he adores. Yeah. And I just find it just absolutely improves the quality.
It just lifts it, doesn't it? I make a chicken liver pate, quite rich in butter, and I usually have it with butter. So I have my seed cracker and a slab of butter and a slab of chicken liver pate and then a nice layer of mustard on the top. Yeah. And it does just change that whole mouthful changes.
Absolutely.
Just with that addition of something,
absolutely,
of something else. That's what I guess I like playing around with these things a bit, but I can see how that's such a big part of what you do, and knowing how to pull all those flavors together and serve them up to us.
It has just simply, I just don't know how to say it. It's like stars in the firmament. It just, you know, they just go off in my head, like, oh, well, that makes perfect sense. You know, everything that I already knew, and especially I love that so many of the things I love are, I didn't have to worry about giving them up or, you know, rebuking them. I never could believe that there was anything wrong with having olives. I couldn't believe they weren't healthy. I just couldn't. And, you know, that olive oil couldn't, that you had to worry about how much you were, you know, putting on your greens or what have you. And in retrospect, you know, as I look back through these traditional food ways and put them, you know, against this ketogenic, low carb, high fat way of eating, it just all falls into place to me, you know, and it, again, like I said, I don't know a better way to say it except that I find it incredibly elegant and really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it just feels so right.
Yeah.
And it tastes so yummy.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You know, I mean, there's literally nothing you can think of that is a disadvantage.
No.
Everything is good on every level. But the fact that it just wraps around your whole life and brings you alive and lets you explore your passion just feels so fantastic.
Absolutely. And with energy. And joy and and a clear mind.
Bonus.
Taking all the marks.
Yeah. So to wrap up today, what would be your top tip that you'd like to offer up to the listeners?
There's so many, but there's been one quote that has stuck with me for a long time, and I have applied it as I've changed my lifestyle through keto also. And it's simple, but it means a lot to me. Base your future on your future, not on your past. I went back to college later in life, and I came across this saying, looking for inspiration. Unfortunately, I can't credit the author, but it has meant a lot to me. Oftentimes, we decide to do what we're going to do based on what we have done. Well, I went to school to become a chef. Why am I going back to school to study psychology? I don't know, but it feels right. And instead of second guessing myself, I'm going to follow the path that's in front of me, which led me to having one of the best teaching jobs of my life that I absolutely adored, teaching veterans returning to the workforce.
Wow.
If I hadn't had that psychology degree, I wouldn't have been able to qualify for that job.
Yeah.
We get caught up in what we've done in the past, but what do you want your future to be? Base your future on your future. If what you did in the past is not going to serve the future that you want, you don't have to feel obligated to hold on to it. And I think it applies for keto.
Yeah, I love that. And really trusting your instinct. So even if you don't know what your future has in store, but you feel something is right,
yeah.
Go with it.
Yeah.
Just run with it. Well, thank you so very much for talking to me today. And I look forward to you coming back and doing some more cookery programs. I think the listeners would really, really love that. Thank you, Tiffany.
Thank you so much. This has just been a delight, and I'm very much looking forward to talking more.
Excellent. To find out more about Tiffany and get links and information from the show, go to www.ketowomenpodcast.com. Do you want to be one of my extraordinary women? Maybe you've an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomenpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this exciting adventure and help create new shows, head on over to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowomen, where you can make a monthly contribution, or you can simply hit the support button on the website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast, so please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. The quote that inspired Tiffany's top tip was from Werner Erhard: create from your future, not your past. And the quote I'm going to leave you with today is from Anaïs Nin: life shrinks or expands in proportion to one's courage. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.